are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. And this is episode number 80. So you know what that means, folks. Whenever we have a round number, we talk about one of the Norse gods. And this episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about a god that the comics seem to have forgotten. Well, almost forgotten. We've actually seen him already on the show. But we're going to be talking a little bit about the Norse god Njord. Before I talk into mythology, I'm just going to touch really briefly on this character in the comics, because quite frankly, he hasn't really appeared very much. His first appearance in Marvel Comics was in Thor number 274 in 1979. This was scripted by Roy Thomas and drawn by John Buscema. It was the Ragnarok storyline, where we were led to believe that the real, true Ragnarok was going to happen. And there were a number of gods and goddesses that appeared in this story that we really hadn't heretofore seen in the Marvel Universe. Now, unfortunately, most of them got really short shrift in the story. They appear in a few panels, and that's pretty much it. Eventually, we'll be telling that story. And of course, the more recent appearance of Njord has been a one-panel appearance in Thor Blood Oath number 6. Now, we talked about that issue a few episodes ago now. It was one of the vacation episodes. So it was one of the few appearances in the Marvel Universe where he appears really only in silhouette and only in one panel, raising the body of that dead giant from the bottom of the sea. The only other comics iteration that I can find for this character is in Peter Madsen's Valhalla series, which unfortunately does not seem to have been translated yet into English. I'm hoping that someday that all these volumes will be translated in English, but it's a Danish comic series, which essentially tells the Norse myths in comic book form, though it's more in the style of something like Asterix or Tintin, where you have like a 60-page volume of the series, and they release one a year or one every few years, and that's kind of what it is. And I've been kind of looking for these in English, and so far have not been successful. Hopefully one of these days we'll actually be able to find that. In Marvel Comics, Njord is generally depicted as the god of the sea. In superhero terms, an Asgardian, less interesting version of the Submariner. In mythological terms, things were very different for this deity because Njord is one of the more important deities in the Norse pantheon. This really makes sense when you think about it. I mean, the Vikings were a seafaring people. Their livelihoods, in large part, depended on the ocean and depended on water. And Njord is not only the god of the ocean, but also the god of wind. Farmers would also appeal to the god Njord to help their crops grow. So you could really even derive from this notion that Njord was also the god of the rain and was responsible for abundant fisheries and so forth. So as you might imagine, this is a pretty important deity in early Norse history. This is also borne out by the abundance of place names in the Norse world that are derived from the name of Njord. And there's quite a few that exist to this day. There are relatively few Norse deities that have this kind of an honor bestowed upon them, Thor being one of them. That really it was the more popular gods that tended to have lots of place names named after them. But it would only make sense that if you're living in a fishing village in Iceland or Norway in the early Middle Ages, that maybe you want to appeal to the god of the sea to help fill your fishing nets. Or if you're in the highlands and you need rain to help your crops grow, maybe you might call upon the name of Njord. Now, one of the other things that we can derive about this god, and this is, of course, borne out by the stories in the lore itself, is that Njord was a member of the Vanir. Remember quite a while ago when we talked about the war between the Aesir and the Vanir and how there were initially two separate pantheons of Norse gods. One was more pastoral and more homely. And then you had the more warlike Aesir come in, the gods like Odin and Thor and Tyr. And they came in and really made their syncretic imprint on the Norse lore and on Norse society. But before that, you had a somewhat gentler pantheon of gods. And of course, this was codified in the lore. And you have the story about the war between the Aesir and the Vanir and some of the major players kind of switching places between Vanaheim and Asgard. And Njord, of course, was one of the Vanir. He was one of these more pastoral gods. In the aftermath of the war between the Aesir and the Vanir, Njord was one of the gods that was chosen to switch places, in this case with the Aesir god Hoenir. Now, we've talked about that on the show before. If you want to hear more about that story, go listen to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 27. Now, in addition to being the god of the sea and of filling fishing nets and of wealth and several other things, Njord is best known probably in the lore for being the father of two of the most popular gods in the Norse pantheon. First, of course, being Frey, who was one of the principal of the Norse gods, one of the top three in the temple at Uppsala, and also the goddess Freya. Not going to go into depth about these two right now, because we're going to be hearing a lot more about them in future episodes. Who the mother of Freya and Freya are is a little bit unclear, though in some versions it's strongly insinuated that their mother is Njord's own sister, who is unnamed. Apparently, the attitude towards incest among the Vanir was a little bit more relaxed than among the Aesir. However, in other versions of the myth, Frey and Freya are actually the son and daughter of the goddess Skadi. And we'll be talking about Njord and Skadi a little bit more next episode where we do our myth reading. Now, one last little interesting side note about Njord is that he is said to be one of the gods who survives Ragnarok and is responsible for reestablishing the kingdom of the gods after everything gets destroyed. So that's kind of interesting in its own right. All right, so I hope you've enjoyed our discussion of the god Njord. Of course, if you have any feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, please feel free to contact the show. And you can do that by emailing the show. Our email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can also find us on Facebook. Just look for Radio Free Asgard on Facebook, and we're the only thing that you're going to find there. All right, so without any further ado, let's go ahead and move on with our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the god of thunder, mighty Thor.
And this week we continue our exploration of Thor Volume 2 with Thor Number 2, also known as Thor number 504, and the cover date is August of 1998, retail for $1.99. Cover art is by Johnny Romita Jr., beautiful painted cover at that, and it shows Thor rising all ghostly-like out of his body, and we've seen that before, haven't we? Yeah, way back in the Thor from 1967, I believe, and he is standing in front of none other than the death goddess Hela, who is giving his ghostly form a little bit of a hand up. Beautiful cover, I have to say. And we open up to the splash page where we pick up exactly where we left off last issue with the Avengers fighting the destroyer on the docks in New York City. And Thor is all crispy critters beneath their feet. And it looks like he's all burned and skin burned off and most of his costume burned off. And we have Captain America, Iron Man, the Scarlet Witch, and Hawkeye, and they all have their logos above their heads. They're standing there, and Hawkeye's screaming, "Nobody does that to one of ours! Nobody! Avengers, assemble!" They are charging at the destroyer. Iron Man has his repulsor rays going, and he's blasting the destroyer. You see Iron Man flying towards him. Hawkeye shooting an arrow, of course. It has some kind of a green gas or something inside. And Captain America's winging his shield at the destroyer and is bouncing off. And we have the title of the story, Deal with the Devil. And I like the font they use. It's kind of like a Tales to Astonish logo from back in the 60s. And we have the credits, of course. Dan Jurgens was the writer. John Romita Jr. was the penciler. Claus Johnson was the inker. Gregory Wright was the colorist. Dave Lanfear was the letterer. Tom Brevoort was the editor. And Bob Harras was the editor-in-chief. So before we get started in the story proper, I just wanted to say a few words about writer Dan Jurgens. Dan Jurgens was born in Minnesota in 1959. Graduated from the Minnesota College of Art and Design in 1981. Wasted no time in getting into comics. His first professional comics work was taking over as the regular penciler of the Warlord series over at DC. He was hand-picked by the original Warlord creator Mike Grell to be his successor on the book. And I remember those issues very fondly. He really did have a very notable career throughout the 80s and 90s, especially over at DC. First as an artist, but then as also a writer and artist. In addition to creating the Hero Booster Gold and getting that whole series started, he indeed was the writer of that series from the entire first volume of the series and most of the second volume of that series, but was also very well known for an almost 9-year run on The Adventures of Superman, first as artist and writer, and then later just as the writer. Jurgens was in large part responsible for the entire Death of Superman plotline, the whole crossover thing that took place in the 1990s, and including creating the character of Doomsday, who's really persisted in the DC Universe to this day. One of the things that I think is a hallmark of Dan Jurgens' work is he has a lot of stick-to-itiveness. He was, you know, almost 9 years on The Adventures of Superman, and he wrote almost the entire series of Thor Volume 2, from issue 1 to issue number 79. Though the bulk of his comics career has been spent over at DC, he also had a few things he did at Marvel, not only Thor, but also some work on Spider-Man and Captain America. As of the time this show is airing in 2012, Dan Jurgens is back as writer and artist on the Superman series as part of the New 52 over at DC. So as you see, he's still very active in comics today. So anyway, we're going back to the story, and like I said, the Avengers are all assembled, and Thor's all crispy and laying on the ground in front of them, and Hawkeye's like, "This is for Thor, you ugly mook! You're going down!" Why did he call him a mook? I don't know. It's one of those comics things, I guess. And Iron Man's saying, "Don't let your anger get the best of you, Hawkeye. The Destroyer is far too dangerous to fight with anything less than your full concentration." And Captain America's agreeing. He's saying, "Iron Man's right. Lose your focus and you'll end up just like Thor." And the Destroyer's like, "Hey, you're gonna end up like the Hammer Boy no matter what you do." And he's smacking Iron Man good. And we get a little bit of an origin story. I guess you have a little bit of background on this guy who is inhabiting the Destroyer armor at this point. And he's pouring his heart out to the Avengers as he's simultaneously knocking them all down. And, you know, this all takes place probably in the space of about 5 seconds. So this is a lot of exposition going on here. "See, I grew up a military brat, dragged all over the world from base to base by the old man. Grew up an enlisted. Truth to tell, though, Colonel Preston Case is sick of it. Sick of the grind. Sick of the red, white, and blue. And most of all, sick of taking orders, of kissing up to the big boys. However it happened, getting pulled inside this suit of armor is the greatest thing that ever happened to me." And you hear a voice, "Case, you are seriously ill." And it's Captain America leaping towards him with his shield out like he's going to hack his head off with it. And he's like, "It's the armor, Case. It's warping your mind." And indeed, he smashes down the Destroyer's neck with a chung. And he's like, "Odin created it as a weapon against the Celestials. This isn't you. Trust me. Trust the man who wears the star, right? Like you have the right to tell me how to behave." And Iron Man is starting to recover a little bit in the background. He's talking to Hawkeye. "Energy is drained, but we have to attack again. Where's Wanda?" Hawkeye mentions that Wanda is off taking care of other business, and Iron Man's like, "What's more important than this?" And Captain America's on the Destroyer's back, wailing on him with his shield, kind of lecturing him as Captain America likes to do. "You swore an oath to defend this country, Case. This hardly fits your mission profile." "Yeah, I swore an oath. You just gotta realize, there ain't no captain that's gonna order this colonel around." And he grabs Captain America and throws him over his head with a scrack, throws him down onto the dock, and see bits of the dock kind of flying away here. And then we see where Wanda is, the Scarlet Witch. She is actually with Thor's body, and she is casting some sort of mutant hex trying to save Thor's life. And the Destroyer, now that he's dealt with Captain America, advances on her and basically is, "Back off, little lady. I got me a job to finish." And Wanda's like, "No, you may not. So long as I breathe, there's a chance that Thor may yet live." "Then I'll just have to make sure you stop breathing." And she casts a hex bolt at the Destroyer and just kind of pisses him off. And he's like, "You and the Thunder God are both going to die now." And he lets out a blast with a shazakt. He knocks both of them off of the dock and into the water. This is important. So pay attention. This is important because this is going to come up later. We see Thor's body sinking down into the Hudson River. I guess that's where this is. And sinking down into the dark, polluted depths of the Hudson. And he's not looking quite as burnt up in this. So I guess the hex is doing some good here. And sinking down, down, down. They show the police who are kind of keeping people away and trying to stop the destroyer, looking on in horror at what they have seen. And the next page is a full-page spread, and it's just Thor sinking. And unlike the previous page, this one is a little bit different because this shows like him in his full costume. It's like his astral form is sinking down into the darkness, and he's kind of being enveloped in this darkness. And we then have the darkness being split by a pair of glowing eyes, and we see that Thor's spirit form has merged into the kingdom of Hela. And you hear a voice,
"Ah! Once again, Vala the prophetess is proven correct. What thine eyes see is mine, mistress. See the one you have desired so long is here. The Odin son is yours, Mistress Hela. Almighty Thor has come to hell at last."
And this doesn't make any sense to me, because having been downed in battle, wouldn't his spirit go to Valhalla and not to hell? See, this is one of those things about Hela and the way Hela is portrayed in Thor comics. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Heroes who die in battle are supposed to go to Valhalla. That's what happened to Thor. So why would he be going to hell? Anyway, and Hela's like, "Silence, Vola! Your prattling annoys me!" And Thor speaks, "Hela, goddess of death, ruler of the Shadow Realm, know thee well that as I have escaped thy eternal grasp in the past, so shall I do it again."
"Nay, long have I desired thy presence at my side, Thor. Thou art without life. Hell is the place for thee forever."
"Whilst a spark of life doth beat within mine breast, I shall fight your curse of damnation."
And we hear another voice, and this is somebody we don't know. This is a new character here.
"Spoken like the warrior born you are, sir."
"Thou art unknown to me, stranger. Be you ally or sworn foe of Thor?"
And we learned that this guy's name is Marnot, and he doesn't want to kind of give away the game. And he's dressed in this rather odd kind of getup, and it's kind of a, not really Asgardian, it's kind of a sci-fi armor sort of thing. It's like high-tech gloves, and he's got this sort of weird sort of space helmet looking thing on, and a big blue cape, and kind of big swashbuckler type boots. But he doesn't look very Asgardian. He doesn't have that sort of Viking look. So this is somebody from completely outside. He says,
"I am Marnot, Odinson. My purposes and intents are mine to keep."
And Vala says,
"Thou art a fool indeed to enter this realm, stranger. Leave, ere my mistress."
And he says,
"You remind me of my ninth wife, hag. I couldn't abide her prattling either."
And he snaps his fingers, and Vala's mouth is gone. And so she's this mouthless being, and she's like, "Whoop." Hela doesn't even know who this person is, so she's like,
"Who art thou? What dost thou require in Hela's realm of shadows?" "As I said earlier, I am Marnot. My only requirement is to accomplish that which I do."
"Pray tell what such a thing might be," says Thor.
"I fix things, Odin's son, in all the worlds, in all the universes and cosmos yet to be explored. When the arrangement of life falls out of balance, I repair it."
"Ah, thou art here with the intention most noble of returning me to Midgard. Thou art powerful and wise indeed."
And Hela doesn't agree. She's like,
"Nay, the life of Thor be not thine with which to trifle, stranger."
And Marnot is like,
"Could it be that the Thunder God's life concerns me not? That the death of another draws me here?"
"By Odin's beard, hath another valiant hero fallen this day? Intrepid Iron Man? Mayhaps Captain America?"
"The legendary ego of the gods. How droll. Is it so inconceivable to you that the one I speak of is a mortal?"
What, so Iron Man and Captain America aren't mortal now? What's the deal here? And we shift scenes now back to New York City, and we see Demetrius knocking on a purple door, and this door is answered by Hannah, who, remember from last issue, is the girlfriend of Jake Olsen. Now, if you recall last issue, we saw Jake Olsen trying to rescue this woman from a burning car, blah, 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 big explosion, shrapnel in the back. We think Jake Olsen is dead. And apparently Demetrius thinks he's dead as well. And so he's here to tell Hannah the bad news.
"Hannah, I think you better sit down. There's news. Bad news."
"Demetrius, what are you doing here at this time of day?"
And it kind of plays the scene out of Demetrius is telling Hannah that Jake is dead. And she's like, no, it can't be. And at the same time, we're seeing the scene replayed of Jake trying to carry the woman to safety and getting caught in the shrapnel and falling down. And at the same time, this scene is being played out of Demetrius telling Hannah what went on. We also are getting the narration from Marnet telling Thor and Hela what has gone on. So we're kind of getting the same version of the story three times here. I really like that as a storytelling device. It's quite effective, but it's a bitch to try to relate the story to you in a straightforward way. But anyway, so I just kind of have to paraphrase what's going on in this page. And Hannah's crying and he's in denial. It's like, oh, we're getting married. You can't tell me. You can't. And he's like, he pulled her out just in time when the car blew, saved her. But Jake is gone, Hannah. I'm sorry. And Thor, in the meantime, is talking to Marnot. He says, and he's saying, you are too obsessed with the Destroyer to notice the heroics and sacrifice of that mortal, Odin's son.
Thou speakest true, Marnot. Mine heart is filled with regret.
And we then shift scenes fully back to Hel, and we have this conversation still going on here.
A god humbled, a most unusual sight.
Thou hast shown me the folly of mine ways, Marnot. Were it possible to reverse the flow of time and save that good mortal's life, then know thee well that Thor would most surely fight to do so.
And Hela's ever the spoiler is like,
a dream less tangible than smoke itself, Thor. Thou art bound to me. You're certain of this, witch? Bind thy tongue, lest thee be imprisoned here as well, stranger. Thor's life is mine, eternally confined to this realm. You're sure he is dead? That there isn't still a portion of his life force left on Earth?
And Hela touches Thor's ghostly form, and she's like,
there can be no little doubt that, no, such a thing cannot be. His presence here is incomplete. The dimmest spark of life yet remains on Midgard. Thou art not Hela's yet to command.
Then I am free to return to Midgard anon, says Thor's ghost.
And Marnot says,
not yet. Though I can revive you, balance must first be achieved. You must atone for the life you wasted, Odin's son.
Thou speakest of the mortal born, the one called Olsen?
Indeed. Restoring an expired life is beyond even my capability. But there is yet a way justice might be achieved. Speak once more of taking Thor from my grasp, and thou shalt silence!
And he grabs Hela around the neck, Marnot does. And she is not real happy about that. And there's this kind of energy crackle going on around, and a very nice Kirby crackle. And like I said, Johnny Romita Jr. is really good at drawing Kirby crackle. And it's like,
silence! Thor is not yours to claim. Life beats within this warrior's heart.
And Hela's like,
fool, that I claim your life for. Speak no more, Hela. Even one such as you might suffer under my wrath.
And there's a glimmer of recognition in her eyes. He's like,
you!
I understand. And Marnot's like, okay, quick Thor, bugger off back to Earth. Cosmic ballast must be restored. Because for Thor to exist on Earth, so too must Jake Olsen. Two lives to be carried on by one man, or God as the case may be. And Thor's like, that's impossible, even for one such as thee. And Marnot is like,
I must hurry. Even now, events which might prevent such a thing are unfolding. Be still, Thor. It is time for you to return.
And there's a big, like, energy burst going around Thor. And he's like,
pray satisfy mine own curiosity, Marnot. What dost thou expect of the God of Thunder?
And he said,
to be the hero and god men have worshipped for so long. Away with you!
And he's starting to glow really, really bright here. And Hela seems to be now really intimidated by this guy. And she's like,
I know not what manner of being you truly be, Marnot, but I command thee to depart this realm and never return.
And I love Marnot's reaction here. He's enjoying this. He's enjoying this humbling of Hela. He's like,
not used to having your feathers ruffled, are you? Farewell, witch woman.
And we cut back to Earth, where it does appear that the Destroyer has defeated the Avengers. And we see the destroyer, and he's sitting on top of a ruined car, and the Avengers are tied up at his feet. It looks like they're wrapped in plastic wrap, sort of, but I don't know what it is. But he's sitting there, and he's got a piece of Iron Man's chest plate tied to his shoulder, and he's carrying Captain America's shield, and he has the Scarlet Witch's cape draped over his arm, and he's got Hawkeye's bow kind of skewered on one of the spikes on his hand, which looks really kind of weird, but okay. So the Destroyer is giving an ultimatum to all the cops and the people who are watching.
Well, now that we've established the pecking order around here, you can feel free to worship me. On your knees!
At that point, he notices something in the wreckage, and it turns out to be Mjolnir. And he says,
My, a trinket I overlooked, the dead god's hammer.
And he tries lifting it, but he can't. And this is how the hammer needs to be written. He's like,
some kind of trick. Can't lift it. Too heavy.
And we see a hand reach up from the wreckage and grab the hammer, and we hear a voice saying,
Nay.
And Thor rises up from the wreckage, the sort of burning, smoking wreckage. And this is what I was kind of pointing at earlier. Why would he be doing that? I mean, the implication here is that his body was buried underneath the wreckage, but we know that's not true. It got pitched into the river. So unless you want to believe that the Destroyer or someone else dived down into the river, retrieved Thor's body, brought it back to the surface, and buried it under rubble, then I think we have a little bit of a mistake here. Anyway, give me a no prize, Stan. Anyway, Thor is rising up from the wreckage, and he's,
no one save Thor may lift the hammer Mjolnir, created by the magic and honor of Odin the Allfather, Lord of Asgard.
And the Destroyer's like, no way, you're dead. I killed you myself. How? And the Scarlet Witch is going to take the responsibility for this. She's,
my hex, Captain America. I cast it upon Thor while he lay on the docks in the hope that he'd find a way to survive.
And Thor is bashing at the Destroyer with the hammer. It's like, a base villain such as thou art unfit to wear the armor of one so proud, and bashes the piece of Iron Man's armor off his shoulder. And he hits him again with a chang and knocks Captain America's shield off of him. And he says,
or art thou noble enough to carry the shield and colors of one whose every move defines honor? And how dare thee tarnish the garment of she who preserved the very life you thought to take?
And he smashes the Scarlet Witch's cape off of his arm. And the Destroyer's getting real pissed, and he starts to open up the visor, which is the energy getting ready to spill out of his chest or his face. It's like,
I swear, I'll open this visor all the way. I'll destroy you, them, and the entire world.
And Thor's like, I say thee nay. And he bashes the Destroyer in the head with a brang. And he's like,
never again shall thine evil desires lay waste to Midgard. Watch as Mystic Mjolnir's own power incredible opens a portal through the fabric of time and space itself that shall carry thee from a scene of vast destruction.
And he whirls his hammer around, and we get the Ajax White Tornado and carries both Thor and the Destroyer. Well, maybe not Thor, but we see the lightning flying off this thing. It's whirling around, and next thing we know, Destroyer's in space. And not just any space. It's sort of like Kirby space, or all these millions of planets and Kirby crackle and exploding stars. And, you know, it's sort of the weird Marvel space that doesn't look anything like real space. And Thor's saying,
cast thy dark soul to a place where forevermore thou canst do harm to no one.
Yeah, we've seen that before, especially with Loki. Thor is pretty exhausted by this time, and he's kind of kneeling down trying to recover from what he just did. And the Avengers are watching him, and Hawkeye says, hey, Goldilocks, it's all well and good that you're back, but how about you get off your duff and cut us loose?
All in good time, friend Hawkeye. Much has transpired this day.
And he cuts them loose, apparently, between panels, and the Avengers are loose. He gives Captain America his shield back. Everyone has their little bits back that the Destroyer took from them. Thor says,
thy shield, good Captain. Let no other sully it again.
Never. Care to tell us what happened here today?
It would seem that far more than meets the eye was at work here.
'Tis a tale most long and complicated, fair Wanda, and the crux of that tale demands I must now take mine leave.
And Thor goes flying off, and Hawkeye's like, wow, I thought for sure he was dead. What do you think of that?
And Iron Man's like, who knows? The laws of science seem not to apply to a god of Asgard.
Don't worry about it, people, says Captain America. The world presumed me dead for 50 years. 50 minutes is not a problem.
Now, that's a pretty interesting thing to say here, because this is really implying that Captain America was only rediscovered 5 years before this takes place. And as we know, I mean, his original appearance was 1963, and at that point, World War II had been over for, what, 18 years? So kind of interesting now that it was 50 years and not 18 years. So this is clearly establishing in the Marvel Universe the sliding time scale, which has the Fantastic Four having gone into space maybe 6 or 7 years ago. You have Captain America being thawed out maybe 5 years ago, you know, and it's something that they've gradually worked into their titles and so forth. It's not really all that interesting. I just thought I would point that out as here's a good example of that. And we cut to Thor, and he's gone flying off to the rooftop of some building or another. It's a converted warehouse in Soho, is what it says. He doesn't know why he's going here, so that should be interesting. He finds himself in this like loft or whatever, and he is compelled to bang his hammer on the ground. Remember how he used to do to change back and forth to Dr. Blake? And he bangs his hammer on the floor, and the scene shifts. And we see that Hannah, this is the girlfriend of Jake Olsen, is going to his apartment. I don't know, you know, what you know, she's not even sure why she's going there. She's like,
you must be losing it, Hannah, going to Jake Soho apartment like this on the day the ghosts are going to smack you right in the face, girl. You should know better. But I never did know what was good for me. Stalled when he asked me to marry him. Wanted to make sure I loved him first, and that he'd always be there for me?
And she opens the door, and she sees standing in front of her Jake Olsen, clad only in a towel, and it looks like he just came out of the shower, and he's like, who be you? To be continued. And we will be continuing this story next episode, and that's Thor number 2, also known as Thor number 504. I have to say, Johnny Romita Jr.'s art is not quite to my taste all the time. I did talk a little bit last time about I think he's a really good person on layouts. I really like the way he structures a page, the way he structures a panel. I don't like so much the sketchiness, but I have to say, in this issue, I'm liking the art. I actually do like, maybe Romita Jr. is just kind of growing on me. But I really do like his work in this issue. There's a few panels here and there where his work looks like Chris Sprouse. And I'm wondering if Chris Sprouse was his apprentice or something like that. I mean, without doing more research, I really don't know. But never ye worry, we're going to be doing a mini profile of Johnny Romita Jr. probably next episode, just like we did one for Dan Jurgens this time around. Next week, we're going to be talking about Njord again. We're going to be actually reading one of the Norse myths. And that's something that we do every 9th episode, and that will be next time. So, anyway, like in this issue, like the writing, like the art, there's a lot to like about Thor Volume 2 so far. I know that there are, you know, some issues. We're starting to get into, once again, we're just now establishing who all these characters are going to be. So now we have Hannah, and we have Jake, and we have Hannah's daughter, and we have Demetrius, and we have, you know, it's a lot of new people all at once. And so getting used to this will take some time. And I think that so far, Dan Jurgens has done a really nice job of making these characters seem at least somewhat real. I know they're not really fully realized characters by any stretch of the imagination, not yet. We'll see how that continues as we go further into the series. All right, so thanks very much for listening. That'll be it for this week, folks. But be back next week, and we will have another issue at least, and we will also be reading one of the Norse myths, and that'll be a lot of fun as well. All right, so from Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris. We'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard.